This is the Brian Hayes Show on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
The Brian Hayes Show continues, TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, and on the TSN Go app. Terrell Brown will join us, New England Patriots cornerback. He's coming up in about 15 minutes. I'll ask him about playing in weather like the Seahawks and the Vikings will be playing in on Sunday. Everyone's talking about this, how cold it's going to be in Minnesota. As if that's a surprise. It's January in Minnesota. I mean, of course it's going to be cold. But how does that affect the routine of players? How does it affect the way games can be played? The game planning from the coach? So we look forward to that. Terrell Brown coming up from the Pats at 3:15, and I'll ask him about Tom Brady and his health and whether or not he believes Brady is still planning on playing with a chip on his shoulder, considering Deflategate was less than a year ago, or we're almost at the one-year anniversary. And does he still want to stick it to the NFL and stick it to Roger Goodell? So we'll get to that in about 15 minutes. Twitter is blowing up because El Chapo, the Mexican drug lord, I guess, drug pin. I mean, everything about this guy just screams top of the food chain in the Mexican drug scene. As we know, he escaped from jail down there, I think, about a year ago. Apparently, he's been caught. Which is shocking to me. I honestly thought when he disappeared, when he got out that first time, he would be gone and they'd never see him again. Because they were chasing El Chapo for years, for like decades, I believe, trying to get him behind bars and keep him behind bars. And they finally got him. They get him in there. His people dig a hole for him to get out of the cell. And he disappears, and he's been gone for a while now, and I guess they caught him again. I'm shocked by that. I really thought he would go Kaiser Soze from The Usual Suspects, where when he disappeared, you'd never see him again. Like, I thought he'd be out of there. I thought he'd maybe leave the country and be, you know, in Venezuela or Colombia or who knows where he'd go. But apparently he's caught. El Chapo is caught. So when does he get back out? The clock begins to tick on him escaping from the next jail. Maple Leafs lose last night 2-1 against the Kings. It was a late game. I mean, puck drop was at 10:30. So I stayed up, and I was glad I stayed up because it was actually a very enjoyable game. That Kings team is outstanding. Like, they're a really, really solid team. And I thought the Leafs, yeah, they were overpowered at times. But I thought the Leafs did everything you would expect them to do to try to win the game. They relied on Reimer, who was brilliant. You know, let's get that out of the way right off the bat. James Reimer was brilliant last night. And if Reimer can play more like that over the final 40, 42 games, and Bernier can play more like the way he did the night before and last weekend against St. Louis, that's high-end goaltending. Now, I don't think that can be consistent for 40 or 42 games. I don't think they're going to get, you know, top three or top five goaltending the rest of the way. But could they get top 10? Yeah. I mean, could they get top 15? So you're talking half of the league? I don't think that's that far-fetched. I mean, I remember coming into the season thinking this goaltending tandem should be capable of giving them at least mediocre goaltending. Like, if you asked me before the season, could I see James Reimer and Jonathan Bernier supplying the Maple Leafs with the 15th best goaltending statistics over 82 games, I'd say, yes, I could see that being a case, whichever way you want to evaluate it. The eye test, save percentage, goals against, shutouts, whatever it might be. I'd say, yeah, I could see that happening. And it didn't happen early in the season because Bernier was terrible and Reimer's had some injury problems. Well, if they're both healthy, and Reimer continues his physical makeup of being healthy, and Bernier overcomes the mental hurdles and plays with more confidence, then that goaltending should be drastically improved, and the Leafs should be in a better position to win games. And that's exactly what happened last night. It's a tough game. Back-to-back, L.A. waiting for them at home. The Kings were embarrassed by the Maple Leafs a few weeks ago on hockey night. You knew Daryl Sutter was going to put a quarter in all his players and have them fired up. And that's exactly what you saw. But the Leafs, they had an opportunity to win that game. And now they go into San Jose tomorrow night. And as it currently stands, Jonathan Bernier will get that start. I don't think that will change based on what happened last night. And I don't think it necessarily should change. Bernier had a shutout the night before and played very well in Anaheim. But I think you take more positives out of that game last night than you do negatives. And, you know, we talked a lot about this yesterday after that big win in Anaheim. Where are people's heads at? Should they be confident in what's happening here? Should they feel like the Maple Leafs are actually within range of making the playoffs and should go all out to get there? Or should they be thinking more about Austin Matthews and that top pick? And the truth is, they're really dealing with the best of both worlds right now. They're 5 points out of a playoff spot. They're still 6 points out of dead last. They win a couple games in a row. You can sit there and say, you know what? It's not out of the realm of possibility for them to hover around a playoff spot or get in. There's still half the season left to be played. They lose a couple games in a row, and you say, you know what? Look at this. They still could finish dead last. It's a very weird season this year in the NHL. And I think maybe this is what the NHL was hoping for all along when they implemented the hard salary cap 10 years ago. This is what they've really been waiting for. Are there a couple of upper echelon teams? Yes. Washington being one of them. Dallas being one of them. LA being one of them. Washington's going to run away with their division. LA's going to run away with their division. And it looks like Dallas likely will as well. Even though the Central's very good, maybe Chicago catches them, maybe St. Louis catches them. And there are other very good teams as well, like Chicago, like St. Louis. Florida's playing really well right now. I believe if and when Price returns and is healthy, Montreal is going to be a team to be reckoned with. But then there's just a bunch of teams who happen to exist, happen to be a part of the National Hockey League standings. And that's kind of where the Maple Leafs are right now. I could sell you on the Leafs making the playoffs right now as easily as I could sell you on them finishing dead last. Email us live at tsn1050.ca. John emailing in saying, Hayes, I need your help here. I'm getting carved by my buddies for saying that the playoffs are not out of reach for the Maple Leafs. They keep saying we need to finish in the bottom three, regardless of how the lottery system works out. I believe it would be nice to get Matthews or a Laine type. However, if we feel that it is mandatory for the Leafs to tank and move forward, does that not set the Leafs back 2 or 3 years? I do think that mentality is something that you have to avoid, and I don't think they're going to embrace it. I don't think Babcock, Lou, and Shanahan are going to embrace a tank job or allow these players off the hook and allow them to quit on a couple of games or ever go into any game at any point with those people employed within the organization and suggest it's okay for them to lose. I think they have determined that the full-out tank job, sell anyone that can play, do whatever you can to finish dead last, can do so much damage to your team and to your psyche as an organization, it can become very difficult to overcome. Talk to Buffalo about that right now. They're having those issues as we speak. They did everything they could to finish dead last year, and they still didn't finish with the top pick. And now look at where they are this year. They're still a hot mess. And like I just pointed out, John, yeah, you can sell playoffs as easily as you can sell dead last. But with the new lottery system, like you point out, the top three picks are all subject to the lottery. It's not only the top pick anymore. So there are three separate lotteries, one for the first pick, one for the second pick, one for the third pick. So you're playing the odds 1 through 3. You finish dead last this season, there's a very good chance, a very good chance you're going to finish with the fourth pick. So that's another thing you have to consider. This is not like the NFL, where if you finish dead last, you get that top pick. So even if you bottom out, even if you do it intentionally, you may pick fourth. And then guess what? You're not getting Matthews. You're not getting Laine. You're not getting Puljujarvi. You're still going to get a very good player. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with picking fourth. But if your hope was to pick first, good luck with that. Roman Polak laid out Tyler Toffoli last night. I'll let you hear what Ray Ferraro had to say a little bit later in the hour. Ray was very passionate about this, and it's a conversation that has really been popping up league-wide almost on a daily basis. Like, who is responsible for what's happening here? All these hits from behind, is it the person throwing the hit? Sure, there's a percentage that has to be handed out to that player, but I'm not sure it's unanimous. I'm not sure it's 100% of the blame. You look at that Toffoli play last night, he turns up ice, he put himself in a precarious position. The guy who gets hit, how much responsibility does he need to take? We'll talk about that a little bit later in the hour, and we'll let you hear what Ferraro had to say back on the had to say about it back on the lunch. But up next, Terrell Brown will join us, cornerback with the New England Patriots. We'll get you an update on Tom Brady, on the confidence around the team. What's Belichick really like behind the scenes? And it is going to be so cold in Minnesota on Sunday. I'll ask Terrell how that changes a player's routine. When it's that cold, does it change your routine? That more coming up next. Wild card weekend in the NFL. You can hear these games right here on TSN 1050. I can't wait for it. The next two weekends, the best weekends in football. Two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday. Gets rocking tomorrow. It's going to be awesome. And I've been taking some heat over the past couple of days. I mean, everyone's making their Super Bowl predictions. I keep going back to the well. You know, I will not doubt Brady. I will not doubt Belichick. I will not doubt the New England Patriots. I don't love the AFC. I think it's kind of watered down. And I think the Pats will do it again. And people keep doubting them. Like, have we not learned by now? Do not doubt this team. Let's bring in a member of that said team from the New England Patriots. Here is Terrell Brown. How you doing, Terrell?
I'm good. How you doing today?
Doing very well. Why do people continue to doubt the Patriots?
Well, it's the NFL. You got to doubt. You got to doubt teams, and there's got to be something to talk about. But the great thing about this game is that on any given Sunday, any team could win. So I think with the guys and all of us, we're staying focused and just looking forward to the next game.
Do you get the impression like Tom Brady is still motivated? I mean, we always talk about that chip on his shoulder based on him dropping in the draft, based on him taking over for Bledsoe, the Deflategate stuff last year. I mean, you know him, you're a teammate of his. Is that true that he's constantly motivated?
Yeah, he's one of the hardest working guys I've ever been around. He's self-motivated. I think he prepares every day like it's a game. And it definitely shows on Sunday and how he plays and makes him a Hall of Fame quarterback as well.
What's it like trying to cover him? I mean, I don't know if you've ever played him when you were in San Fran. I mean, I'm sure you've worked against him in practice. What's it like trying to go up against Tom Brady?
Well, yeah, I played against him a couple times when I was in San Francisco and in Oakland as well. But, you know, it's a hard challenge, you know. Pro Bowl quarterback, one of the greatest quarterbacks, you know, that probably has played this game numbers-wise as well. So he definitely poses a threat day in and day out, but he makes you honest and he makes you better day in and day out. So that's the great thing about Tom and the rest of our teammates, that everybody prepares every day and works their butt off day in and day out to make sure that we're ready for the games.
With Terrell Brown from the New England Patriots. Bill Belichick, you know, his image publicly is one thing. I can't believe he's that crusty behind the scenes. What's Bill Belichick like in the room, at practice, on the bus, on the flights? What's Belichick really like?
A great coach, a great team guy, does a great job of motivating us and getting us ready to prepare week in and week out. What y'all see is not what we see on a day-to-day basis. So we just let the outside world speculate and kind of, you know, give Coach that name. But he's a great coach.
When you consider what a lot of people are talking about going into this weekend, on Sunday the Seahawks are in Minnie, and it sounds like it's just going to be freezing. I mean, they're going to break records there in terms of playing in the cold. And
negative, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like under zero, and I mean, we're talking like significantly under zero. I mean, it's going to be crazy in Minnie. I don't know if you've ever played in conditions like that, but if so, you know, just playing in the cold in general, how does that change your routine?
It doesn't change your routine at all. I think it comes down to fundamentals. Who can take care of the ball? Who can still block out the distraction of the weather and still go out there and play their game? So that's what it'll come down to. I think both teams are very qualified to win the game, but it'll come down to ball security.
How tough is it warming up in that? Like when you're out there, like when the game gets going, I'm sure the adrenaline's running, right?
You're not warm. There's no such thing as warming up.
Right, exactly. That's true.
You know, you definitely try to warm up, but, I mean, it's all mental, you know? You have 3 hours to go out there and put in some work, go out there and make your team advance to the next round. So you put that, you block that out, you go out there and you just put your best foot forward and you don't think about the cold weather.
With Terrell Brown, cornerback with the New England Patriots. A few weeks ago, the big story in the NFL was Josh Norman going up against Odell Beckham Jr. I've always believed that one of the great battles in pro sports is a cornerback going up against a wideout. Both positions can be loaded with loud players, players who are willing to talk smack, players who are willing to take on that challenge. As a cornerback yourself, what's it like when you're lining up against, you know, a high-end wideout who you know is looking to burn you? I mean, what's that experience like?
Oh, that's day in and day out. That's at practice as well. You know, because these guys, you know, they're running forward, we're going backwards. So they know where they're going, we don't. So I think the biggest thing is just patience. You're playing with patience or you're playing with panic. And the best thing for a DB to do is play with patience. And if you go out there and play to your ability, play patient, play smart, I think you'll be okay.
Are wideouts talking smack in practice too?
Oh, yeah. I think just that position, you know, we go at it so much. It's a friendly competition. So you're definitely, you know, have a chip on your shoulder and you're definitely going at it, talking noise back and forth with each other. But it's all within the sport and it's in sportsmanship, but everybody's a competitor.
If the scheme, for whatever reason, led to you having to match up and try to shut down Gronkowski, what would that be like?
You got to mix it up. I don't think you can play him one type of way. He's a great tight end, one of the, if not the best tight end in the league. He's a size nightmare to match up with, speed. He's very strong. I think the biggest thing for me to do was be try to use my quickness against him. You know, I wouldn't try to get in a wrestling match with him because that wouldn't work well to my advantage.
No kidding, man. I mean, that applies to everyone, right?
No doubt.
Have you ever partied with Gronk?
No, I have not.
You got to make that happen, right?
Maybe one day.
Okay.
Maybe one day.
Maybe if you guys win another Super Bowl, you can find a way to get to Vegas with Gronk. With Terrell Brown from the New England Patriots, you've got a clothing line out, Stutt Apparel. The website is stuttworld.com. Tell us about that.
It's an acronym for Stronger Than You Think, something I came up with right after I started my foundation called Brown's Kids Foundation to help underprivileged kids get an opportunity to have a little more than what they have as far as school supplies. We give out backpacks. We give out different things throughout the year. So I started the Stutt clothing line, just something I just enjoyed. I work out in the clothing. You know, one thing about life is you're only as strong as your next battle. So, or your next test in life. So I understand that everybody goes through things, but it's not, you know, what you go through is how you deal with it.
Again, the website is stuttworld.com. He is Terrell Brown from the New England Patriots. We always appreciate you taking time. Enjoy the playoffs, man. We'll do it again down the road.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You got it. Terrell Brown. He's not the biggest guy in the world. So, yeah, trying to shut down Gronkowski. I mean, good luck. Good luck. That's got to be terrifying. If for whatever reason there's some mashup with the headset and the wrong play gets sent in or no play gets sent in and the defense, they break huddle and somehow some guy gets locked up and it's like, oh, great, I'm on Gronk. My job is to stop this animal. Like, there's chatter now that Gronkowski may be the most dominant player in the history of the game. And this is the problem with these conversations with the NFL, because I really feel like you've got to take the quarterback position out of that whole conversation. Like, when you're talking about what the quarterback represents and how much that position factors into the way the whole sport works, the outcome of every game, I don't know if you can get to a point where you say the greatest player of all time is someone that isn't a quarterback. Although, even with that said, the NFL Network a few years ago, they had a panel that voted on this, and they came up with the 100 greatest players of all time, and I don't believe a quarterback cracked the top three. Jerry Rice was number one. Jim Brown, I believe, was number two. And I think Lawrence Taylor was number three. So you got a wideout, a running back, and a linebacker, according to that lineup. I think Montana was like fourth. I think Manning was eighth. I don't think Brady was in the top ten. I'll bet you that would change or will change 5-10 years down the road. I think we'll look at Brady a little bit differently than maybe we would have 2-3 years ago because he's added another Super Bowl ring to his resume. But in terms of just sheer dominance at their position, I mean, when you put quarterbacking aside, again, the fact that Brady and Manning are still playing, they would be a part of this overall conversation. You're talking about all-time greats. Those two would be a part of that conversation. But I'm thinking Gronkowski at his position. I'm not sure there's been a more dominant tight end. And I think you can consider J.J. Watt in this conversation. You know, when all is said and done, if J.J. Watt continues at this pace, will J.J. Watt go down as one of the top five defensive players to ever play the game? I mean, that's a tough list to crack, but you look at the season he had last year, that's probably the greatest defensive season I've ever seen. Like, I kind of missed out on the LT years. But you look at J.J. Watt a year ago, I mean, it was just crazy. And that's why this weekend, you know, I'm leaning towards Kansas City winning that game, but you look at Houston, the way they've been playing defensively in the second half, Alex Smith, he better be careful. Andy Reid better be careful because J.J. Watt will be flying tomorrow afternoon. You can email us live at tsn1050.ca. On Twitter, at HayesTSN. We'll continue to look ahead to the weekend for the NFL playoffs, wild card matchups, who we like, who we don't like. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. And that Pollock hit on Toffoli last night, Ray Ferraro was pretty passionate about it earlier in terms of the way he saw it all play out and what he thinks should have happened the night before to avoid it playing out at all last night. We'll let you hear that next. All right, so last night's Maple Leaf game, I mean, it was a tough physical game. That's as physical as you can get without a fight in the National Hockey League. Like, it was chippy. There was some chirping going on. It was just big boys throwing their body around, couple of scrums. Komarov was doing what he does, and he was agitating Drew Doughty, and Milan Lucic, he had an attitude problem last night. He's always got a bit of an attitude problem. It felt like something was about to break out. But because fighting doesn't really happen anymore, and the Leafs never fight, I guess it never came to fruition. But it felt like it was just on the verge. And I feel like if Roman Pollock didn't get kicked out of that game last night, he may have been in a position where he would have had to answer the bell. Milan Lucic went at him, but it was more of like a scrum, and I think JVR may have jumped on Lucic, and it just never materialized. If you missed it, early in the game last night, Tyler Toffoli was taking the puck wide on Roman Pollock, and Pollock was basically angling him towards the corner, and Toffoli had nowhere to go. I mean, Pollock was going to take him out in the corner and more than likely take the puck away from him. So Toffoli, last second, stopped and turned up ice. Well, Pollock had already committed to the hit and laid him out. And it was a hit from behind, and it looked bad. It was a gruesome look. Pollock got kicked out. He got five in a game. But we got into this conversation. It was pretty heated earlier this afternoon on the lunch. And Ray joined us, and I'll let you hear this comment in just a moment. But Pollock hit Mike Santorelli from behind the night before. And it was a bad hit from behind. It was worse, in my opinion, than the Toffoli hit from behind last night, because Santorelli, there was nothing he could have done to protect himself. There was nothing he did wrong. He just happened to be there, and Pollock laid into him. Toffoli could have just continued to skate and taken the original hit, a clean hit from Pollock. He stopped and tried to turn back up ice, and I believe put himself in a dangerous position. Now, it's still on Pollock to find a way to stop there or find a way to bear hug to Foley, even though that's not legal, and maybe that would have caused him a penalty or cost him a penalty in the end. So where I place the percentages, I'm not sure. You know, still 75-80% on Pollock, but not 100% on Pollock. Some of the blame has got to be on Toffoli, and it sucks saying that because this is the victim in the end, the guy that got hit from behind. And luckily, Toffoli got up. He was fine. He played the remainder of the game. Bob's your uncle, all good. But the fear is at some point someone's not going to get up, someone's going to get stretchered off, and something significant is going to happen here. So we were talking to Ray about this earlier this afternoon. Here's what Ray said.
Here's the thing. He shouldn't have been playing last night.
Pollock.
He should have been suspended.
Well, sure, but yeah. he was playing.
Well, sure.
But he was playing, so we're talking about
because
the example that happened.
Because the league has got their head up their ass.
Okay.
They don't get it. Roman Pollock should have been suspended for the hit on Mike Santarelli. Somebody's going to get really hurt.
Yeah.
Seriously, seriously hurt. And the league's done nothing, in my opinion, to mitigate this problem. They don't give any direction. They told Berkey to shove his bear hug up his rear end.
He was talking about Brian Burke there, and Burke's had that idea for a while, that within 2 or 3 feet of the boards, defending players have the ability to bear hug a player so that they don't resort to actually punishing them with a hit. And it won't be called a hold. There will be a limit on how much time you can actually bear hug the guy. But last night's a perfect example of where you wish that was there. Because Pollock would have just grabbed Toffoli and said, no, sorry, dude, you're not going anywhere. But the game is so fast now. Players with the puck can't protect themselves the way they once could. You know, Ray and O and Noodles talked about this a lot over the afternoon. Back in the 80s and 90s, and certainly well before that, you want to protect yourself from getting hit? You'd elbow a guy. You'd cross-check him in the face. If a guy wanted to run you, go ahead. Do it at your own peril. It's going to cost you 4 teeth because I will cross-check you right in the face. And the ref didn't call it. And if he did, he gave you 2 minutes. Now if that happened, the guy that was being run, if he threw his elbow up to protect himself, he'd get 5 games. So he can't do that. They've taken that ability away from them. The importance of puck possession today, I think, has changed the game as well. The idea of just letting a play go, it doesn't really exist as much as it once did. You know, Toffoli, again, could have just embraced for contact, given the puck up, move on to the next play. He's sitting there saying, no, I don't want to turn it over because I've been told I shouldn't be turning it over. But it's a tough spot for the National Hockey League because it's something that it doesn't look right. It's very dangerous. The refs, they have no idea how to call it because the game is too fast and the hits come at just such a rapid pace, last night being a perfect example. I don't blame them for throwing Pollock out of the game. Not at all. Based on the way it looked live and in replay, to be fair. But in replay, you had the ability to see that I think Pollock had committed to the hit and then Toffoli turned on him. But live, it looked horrible. And the fact that Toffoli stayed on the ice for a while, if you're a ref, you're saying, I've got to play it safe here. I got to throw Pollock out. I can't have two minutes up on the board and a stretcher coming out and taking Toffoli off the ice. That'll be difficult to explain. But a lot of people came up with their own ideas here. Some of them far-fetched, some of them understandable. Jamie emailing in live at tsn1050.ca saying, easy solution to players turning last minute. 2-minute minor for boarding to Pollock with a 2-minute minor for diving on Toffoli. Call it just like they would in a minor hockey game. You're not doing that. You're not doing that because the guy is still playing the game. He's putting himself in a dangerous position, but he's not really cheating the game. He's not actually diving. He's getting crushed. Like Toffoli got crushed last night. That wasn't a dive, but he could have done something to avoid it. Russ emailing in. Live at tsn1050.ca, saying, I was lining a midget AAA game 5 or 6 years ago, and I heard a coach telling his players to turn on a hit to induce a check from behind. That was the first of many times that I heard this from a coach. This mind frame is finding its way to the NHL. This will increase severe injuries. Yes, the player delivering the check is supposed to have control, but it's a fast game, and when players turn, injuries will happen. Well, I'm going to take you at your word. If that's the case, again, I'm not surprised coaches would think that way, because I'm not sure coaches really consider the well-beings of their players all the time when they're in the heat of the action. And I'm sure they'd be thinking, it'll be okay. Let's take the 2 minutes and try to score on the power play. That's still, it's scary. It shouldn't happen. And I'm not suggesting that every coach would think that way, but I'm not surprised some coaches would think that way. But I do think that's a part of it. Let's see if we can induce penalties here. Let's see if we can get to the power play. You know, the special team game is so important in the NHL today and so important in the sport of hockey in general. Five on five, it's so clogged up. It's so overcoached. It's so congested. Every square inch of the ice feels like it's filled up with multiple players. Sometimes teams have to rely on inducing penalties. But this is scary. The idea of a coach saying, hey, see what you can do to get hit from behind. If that's true, that's the kind of coach you do not want hanging around kids or at any level. But as I said earlier, I'm not surprised that kind of mentality would be kicking around. And finally, Scott emailing in saying he's been a longtime ref, 15-plus years, certified official down in the U.S., streaming online, saying, as to when it became a part of the game to turn your back on the play to protect the puck, it was a year or two after the stop signs were first put on the back of youth players. As soon as the players and their coaches and parents realized the players could not be body checked legally with their back turned, it became a learned tactic to, quote-unquote, protect the puck. I do think that's a part of it. Players getting hit can't really protect themselves. And there's such an emphasis on puck protection now. The idea of turning it over, something players usually will not accept because the coaches will not accept. Now, as for what's going to happen with Roman Pulak, I haven't heard anything on him being suspended. I don't think he'll be suspended because he was kicked out of the game last night. And I think because Toffoli was okay in the end and because Toffoli turned at the last second, they'll likely let him off the hook. But if Pulak doesn't play, I guess maybe Frankie Corrado gets back in there tomorrow night. TSN Drive with Dave Naylor coming up at 4. We'll tee that up, get to our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine. You know what we're looking ahead to. Wild card weekend. So we'll touch on that. We'll touch on Denver announcing that Peyton Manning will, in fact, start with them next weekend. And the Raptors are in action tonight in Washington. Why isn't DeMar getting more love for the All-Star game? We'll talk more about that as well. This is The Brian Hayes Show. TSN Drive with Dave Naylor up at 4 p.m. Kate Burness riding shotgun throughout the afternoon. So Dave and KB coming up in about 15 minutes. Raptors in action tonight down in Washington. I've spent the past couple of days talking about, the All-Star game and who's going to represent the Raps. And I think Kyle will likely get there, and I think he would be deserving. You know, I'm all for that, and especially considering it's in Toronto. I do think that's important. It happens all the time. Whichever team is hosting this, their fans make sure at least one of their players, if not a couple of their players, get in. Like, unless it's in, like, Philly. Like, if the All-Star game was in Philly this year, I don't know what they'd do. But the idea of Kyle Lowry being an All-Star, I mean, that's not far-fetched. That's not insulting to other players or insulting to the All-Star brand. He's not the John Scott of the NBA. So I'm all for Kyle going. I'm all for the team promoting that idea. I'm all for the fans jumping on Twitter, jumping online, voting, tweeting, retweeting, what have you. But let's get some love here for DeMar. That's what I pointed out yesterday. It feels like it's all about Kyle. Let's get DeMar in the All-Star game too. Let's get some love for DeMar DeRozan. DeMar's been here longer. He's been a great ambassador for the team, for the city. I know his contract is up at the end of the year, and I hope that's not factoring into this. Wouldn't surprise me. But I think DeMar, in the end, is going to say he wants to return. Like, I think DeMar is really the kind of Raptor we've always been looking for. You know, we focus on the guys who left all the time. Stoudemire wanting out, T-Mac wanting out, Vince wanting out, Bosch wanting out. Well, here we go. We got DeMar DeRozan, who's from Compton, California, went to school at USC, and he's been up here for, what, 6 years now? Drafted in 09, and loves it, and I believe wants to return. Like, I don't get the sense, like, there is concern here within the organization that DeMar, now that he's going to have an opportunity at the end of the year to walk, is definitely going to walk. Now, maybe he will. You know, maybe he gets offered a better deal somewhere else. Maybe Masai Ujiri and the Raptors feel like instead of giving him a max deal, which is what he would be seeking out and what he will get, maybe it would make more sense for them to spend that money in a different area or on multiple players instead of one player. I don't know. But I don't get the impression right now, and I could be wrong in the end, maybe he will prove me wrong, that DeMar's sitting here saying, I got to get out of this crazy Canadian town. You know, where's my ESPN? What's the metric system? You know, I don't get that impression. I really don't. I think DeMar is the Raptor we've always been looking for, the Raptor who really loves being a Raptor, loves being a part of Toronto. And I know he's a fan favorite anyway, but I think that kind of a quality deserves that much more fandom. And so I say get him there. You know, Bieber was tweeting out yesterday about getting Chris Paul into the All-Star game. His call. He can do whatever he wants. He's got no ties to the Raptors. He doesn't have to promote a Raptor. I know last year he promoted Kyle Lowry, and that helped Lowry a lot, get a lot of votes online. But if he's going to promote someone, promote DeMar. And if Drake is going to promote someone, Drake, I would argue, has more of an obligation to do so, considering he is associated with the team. He is the global ambassador. Get DeMar. Get DeMar going to the NBA All-Star game. That's who I want to see there. As for the game tonight, they're in Washington, and I think considering what happened a year ago, considering Washington just embarrassed them, and by extension embarrassed the fans. You know, it was tough being a Raptors game through those four a Raptors fan through those four games, especially after they left Toronto. You know, the first game I remember was such an ugly game, but the Raps had a chance. It was close. Second game, not even close. And then the third game, they got smoked, and then they just shut it down for the fourth game. Like, by the time they left Toronto after game two, it was like done. There was no point in them even flying to D.C. because there was no way they were coming back home for game five. And as I said earlier, as a fan base, you're always seeking redemption. You want to be redeemed as a fan. You're not going to get it. You won't be satisfied with a win in the regular season. Regular season wins mean nothing when you got spanked on the biggest stage in the playoffs. But the way things are working out right now, the Raptors are in a playoff spot. I believe they will go to the playoffs. Washington's been one of the more disappointing teams in the NBA this year, but they've been hit with bad injuries. If and when they get healthy and start playing better, I think they still will get in or will have a very good chance of getting in. So maybe the Raps will end up playing them in the end. As for the NFL playoffs, they kick off this weekend. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine here in just a moment. We know Denver will not be playing this weekend, but when they do return next weekend at home, it's going to be Peyton Manning behind center. And this storyline is incredibly compelling. I don't believe Peyton can do it anymore in January in tough weather conditions against the best teams. I don't believe he can, but he has been well-rested. He has not played in a long time. The second half this past weekend notwithstanding. So maybe he's re-energized. Maybe he finds some more life and some more zip in that shoulder, in that arm. And for his case, I hope it happens. I do think that has the chance to be the most Hollywood story of any story going on right now in the National Football League. Peyton returning, Peyton going on a run, Peyton winning that second ring, and I wonder if that happens, will he shut it down? But as for just simply the logistics, I do think it's the right move. Brock Osweiler was okay, and I think he'll be their guy starting next year, and we'll see what he does with his career. I don't believe Brock Osweiler is going to win them a Super Bowl this year. Again, I don't believe Peyton will either, but if you're asking me who would I put my money on, being capable of doing that. I would go with a guy who has done it before, maybe catches lightning in a bottle again for three games. They've got a great defense. The running game is okay. So I'm fine with them going with Peyton Manning. And I think it was the right call announcing that yesterday. Get it out of the way now. Go through media for a few days, because starting next Monday, when you know who you're going to play, it is go time. And start scheming, start setting it up, and start preparing for Peyton behind center. As for our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. I'm taking the Chiefs minus 3.5. I don't love that line. Houston at home with that defense scares me a little bit. But I do think Kansas City, they've run off, what, 10 wins in a row? The quietest 10-game winning streak in the history of the NFL. Alex Smith is playing well. They've got some weapons on offense, not a lot, but they're healthy on defense, and that's what's important here. Brian Hoyer to get the start for Houston. I think Hoyer could be in big, big, big trouble. I'll take Kansas City minus 3.5. The night game on Saturday, battle of the AFC North, I don't think Dalton's going to play. If it's A.J. McCarron, I like Pittsburgh, because I think that will be a shootout, and I don't think McCarron can keep up with Big Ben and his weapons. I think there's going to be some points up on the board, but Pittsburgh always plays well in Cincinnati. Roethlisberger always plays well in his home state of Ohio. I think Pittsburgh wins that game. I'll take them minus 3. As for the other side, the other conference, I'm going with the home dogs here. I think because of the weather conditions, it could be a close game, Minnesota-Seattle. I could see a backdoor cover here. I'll take the Vikings plus 6. I think Seattle wins that game, but I could see it being a backdoor cover. I could see it being close. And Green Bay-Washington, basically a pick 'em. Green Bay's minus 0.5 on pro line. I hate to say it. I hate to do it. I'm taking Washington. And maybe this is just me hedging my bet, because I'm a Packers fan. I love the Pack. I want to see the Packers win. If they don't, maybe I can claim, hey, at least I bet on the opponent. Throw down $20 on all four. If you score all four correctly, you can win $200. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. Enjoy the weekend. It should be a blast. We're back Monday at noon. We'll chat then.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot for that look into sports, Brian.
Yeah.